You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the S E A.
Hello and welcome to episode 461 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton,
and I'm Tristan Carcino,
and we're coming to you in separate locations. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion Storm,
and I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of Super Bowl 48 champions Seattle Seahawks, and soon to be some new Seattle Seahawks coming up this next weekend.
We have decided the best move here was to give you a full 24 hours before the NFL draft to listen to our NFL draft preview.
I like the idea that anybody cares.
That's how long it took me to actually do any research about this year's NFL draft or develop any opinions whatsoever. But now I have
opinions. You have opinions developed? There we go.
Yeah. You know, I told you, I think it was offline. I told you a couple weeks ago that I had zero excitement about the draft because it felt like a very much eating your vegetables draft. But I do think like once you get to know some names and you're like, oh, I hope that player is available or I would like that player for the Seahawks, then you do feel differently about it than when it's just
I'm
of a draft.
I'm so fascinated who those players are. And I'm here to break it to you that none of them will be available.
Oh, that's, I mean, probably not true.
The draft pick was... The victory against the Rams cost them only one slot. Is that right? They would have been ahead of the Bengals.
We looked this up at one point.
I think they would have been ahead of the Bengals, and now they're behind the Bengals is the only difference.
That does seem reasonable in hindsight. I mean, we can go over the picks the Seahawks have.
A Patriots-like catastrophe.
Certainly not, yes. The Arizona Cardinals picked 16th, and they had an 8-9 record, the Seahawks. Yeah. So they would have been tied, right?
But I think the Seahawks had they had the tiebreaker because they beat the Cardinals twice.
I don't know how that. No, the Seahawks would have been 9-8, so the Seahawks would have been ahead. Yeah. So yes,
it was one pick. I remember it being one pick at the time, and I was like, "All right, fine. For this one pick, you could beat the Rams for nothing."
I would agree with that. All right, let's go over the picks the Seahawks do have, including number 18 overall in the first round. They have a pair of second round picks, thanks to the DK Metcalf trade, number 50 and 52. And then a pair of third round picks, thanks to the Geno Smith trade, number 82 and 92. They also have pick 137 in the fourth round, 172 and 175 in the fifth round, pick 223 in the seventh round. So as we've talked about, this is certainly like a good starting place for the Seahawks in terms of draft capital, thanks to those trades. Like whatever you thought about those trades and the value they got, it's put them in a good position for the draft now. So,
which is all that matters.
Exactly. I kind of wanted to first talk about the Seahawks and draft the offensive linemen because it is such a talking point, the offensive line in general and the Seahawks drafting of offensive linemen. And I'm here to tell you that not even counting Russell Okung, if we start with the 2010 draft, the sort of the start of this era of Seahawks football, you know, or like once they, you know, first established the Pete Carroll, John Schneider, like have taken over and then started to actually put their stamp on the team. The Seahawks have used the 10th most draft capital of any team on the offensive line based on the Chase Stewart chart using Pro Football Reference's positions. The average team has taken about 2.5 offensive linemen in each round in that span. There's historically been slightly more in the third, slightly fewer in the second. That's probably just randomness. The Seahawks have used 3 first-round picks on offensive linemen, James Carpenter, Jermaine Ifedi, and Charles Cross. They have used 2 second-round picks, Justin Britt and Ethan Posick, and 5 third-round picks, which is an unusually high number, those yielding Christian Haynes, Damian Lewis, Ibrahim Lucas, John Moffitt, and Reese Odhiambo. So the problem is not like the Seahawks' investment in offensive line in the draft. Like, and then we can debate like how well they've actually drafted. It's tough to evaluate offensive line draft picks, like approximate value. This is something that Third Pelton brother Zach Whitman highlighted back in the day with Jermaine Ifedi specifically. Like he got a lot of credit for playing a lot on the Seahawks offensive line. He wasn't actually playing that well and then didn't play nearly as much when he left the Seahawks. So it's a little hard to do that, but they're in the top 10 in approximate value. And Third Pelton brother Shil Kapadia noted that they had not drafted a Pro Bowler. I just don't think that's that unusual or that notable. There's about 7 teams, I think, that have not drafted a Pro Bowler. And number one, like the odds of any individual second or third round pick becoming a Pro Bowler on the at any position are very low. And then number two, Truss Cross has been a perfectly fine number six pick and probably will, assuming, will at some point in his career, assuming he stays healthy, be a Pro Bowl.
Yes.
Which does make it a little
pick
interesting.
Nine, not six.
So, okay, yeah. Which does make it a little interesting. The Seahawks, in a bit of news, John Schneider's pre-draft press conference said, let's see, I have the quote written down here somewhere about picking up Charles Cross's fifth-year option. We'll answer that at a later date. It can't be too much later. They only have until May 1st to decide. That projects to $17.6 million. There does not seem to be any compelling reason not to pick that up. But I suppose there's also no reason to do it before they have to. So
they're picking it up.
Yes. Any thoughts on the Seahawks and draft the offensive lineman?
I mean, it's not the worst list of players when you break it down like that with this list of players. And also because you're not including, why are we not including the Russell Okung draft?
Because he was a Pro Bowler and therefore the stats starts after Russell Okung.
That's so funny. Because it makes the Seahawks look worse, or
yes, it is a very
is this
arbitrary
a thing
endpoint.
That you did?
No, I'm responding to Shields' stat on the Seahawks not drafting a Pro Bowler in the offensive line.
So he basically set that mark as, because the obvious place to do it is when John Schneider took over,
right? One would think,
but including a Pro Bowler then makes it look slightly better for the Seahawks. It's a little bit of like attempting to dunk on the Seahawks.
It's more than a little bit of attempting to dunk on the Seahawks. And look, the Seahawks offensive lines have not been good. The Seahawks deserve to be dunked on for their offensive line. I do think like the bigger reason for that is they have not wanted to spend on second contracts for their offensive linemen. Like Damian Lewis, who was a perfectly good starter at guard, like good value
or
for where
Russell
you drafted
Okung
him.
Also,
I mean, I think he did get a second contract, but maybe not a third. I don't know. I'd have to go back in the archives on that one.
But the argument would
wanted...
be that they haven't drafted players who are good enough to warrant a second contract.
But Damian Lewis was good enough to warrant a second contract, and the Seahawks just weren't willing to pay that because they don't want to pay offensive linemen very much. And that's a separate conversation we can debate. I think the thing that gets left out of it is, if you want the Seahawks to pay more on offensive line, what's the position you want them to pay less on? Because I mean, I have an answer.
It's probably safety, but what is your
running
back?
They're not paying,
safety.
They're not paying that much at safety now.
They were.
I mean, sure, but they're not now, and they're still not spending that money on offensive line. I mean,
Spending that money on offensive line. There's a reality here.
Right.
Charles Cross is almost certainly going to get a second deal in Seattle.
It's just a question of health. He certainly has been performance-wise when he's been on the field.
Again, when you break down the individual players, it's like this is not as bad as it would seem. I don't buy that when you're talking about this long of a time period and when you're talking about this many players, that drafting ability comes into it. I don't even necessarily believe in the idea of drafting ability over a long time period of, right?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing at that?
I was laughing at something on the Discord.
Oh God, what's on the Discord?
It was a joke about Brady Russell and how he happens to look like Diedrich Bader in Office Space.
Okay, fair enough. But I don't know if I necessarily even believe that there is such a thing when you're talking about such a long time period. And great that it's been John Schneider that whole time period, but like, is John Schneider just abnormally bad at drafting offensive linemen? I still think probably not. It's a small enough sample size that even though they have spent the 10th most draft capital on offensive linemen, you could still just kind of get unlucky during that time period. The difference, luck is really the biggest factor here. Like, there's a world where Jermaine Ifedi was overdrafted probably for where he was picked, but like, there's a world that James Carpenter becomes a Pro Bowl offensive lineman, right? That's not an unheard of thing to have happened. I'm actually like, I guess Charles Cross could have been a Pro Bowl offensive lineman last year. You know, like, they haven't drafted anybody who's been exceptionally good. But even positionally, right, this has been guards, this has been centers, this has been tackles. I think the Seahawks have just been a little bit unlucky when drafting offensive linemen.
I don't know if they've been that unlucky, but like, the difference between them and a team that has just one random third round pick who goes on to make one Pro Bowler, like, that's not a meaningful distinction.
Exactly. And those players, it's not like because you draft whatever single player who ends up being the Pro Bowler. Like, if you're using high draft capital and somebody ends up being a very good offensive lineman, then great. That's kind of how the process should work. But if you do draft somebody in the third, fourth round who ends up being very good, you got lucky on that player. That's how it works. And that's why you spend this much capital, is because the hope is to get lucky on those players. The hope was for the Seahawks to have found the players that could anchor the offensive line for a long period of time. They just haven't. So I guess rather than saying they've been unlucky, I will say that the Seahawks have been slightly unlucky that they've spent this much draft capital and not lucked into finding an offensive lineman who has been a little bit more above the pale.
Would you agree with that? Also, Russell Okung, to close the circle here, he did not get a second contract. The reason I was confused about it is because he predates the current rookie contracts that are a maximum of 5 years for first-round picks. He had a six-year first contract. So he spent 6 years in Seattle.
I mean, that was a good chunk of time also, though. But I don't know. I'm just like the hemming and hawing about offensive linemen right now, because I guess I'm curious how this leads to you're bringing this up because the anticipation is obviously, like, when you look at the roster, the most glaring need for the Seahawks overall is offensive line, right?
I mean, the simple check the box in you're doing a mock draft is Seahawks need offensive line, interior offensive lineman, give Seahawks interior offensive lineman. Boom, bam, I'm on to pick 19.
Yep.
I don't think the Seahawks are going to pick an offensive lineman in the first round. I think the there is a bet on this, I'm pretty sure. Let me double check what the odds are. And I would definitely like take another position. I think the odds are not good at for the Seahawks for offensive line.
I think it depends on who is out there. Here's what I'll say.
I mean, obviously it depends who's out there. I think there's one offensive lineman that I think is worth drafting at pick 18. Who might realistically be out there.
I was going to say, there's more than one offensive line, but
yes,
you're saying Kelvin Banks, if Kelvin Banks is there, the Seahawks should draft Kelvin Banks.
Call it in. I'm good.
I agree with that. And then you're also saying you don't think they're going to draft Gray Zabel.
It would be ridiculous to draft him at pick 18. It would be preposterous.
That is basically what you're saying, is it's kind of between those two players, though. And Gray Zabel's definitely been mocked at the Seahawks quite a bit. Every time I see it, I think to myself, these people are just, they're taking, it's the easy way out, right? It was the Aston G&T to the Raiders pick, right? It was Pete Carroll loves running backs. They're going to draft him. It was funny when I was thinking about that. And then it seems to me like chalk right now is G&T's going to the Jaguars because they just need to repeat Leonard Fournette. But when Pete Carroll, granted, this was Pete Carroll and John Schneider.
All right. Offensive lineman is -120 to be the Seahawks first round pick.
That's insane. Can you short that?
I mean, you just have to bet all the other positions. I don't know that it would work out, but I mean,
but I was thinking back to me,
by the way, I mean, wide receiver at 4-1 is pretty good odds. Defensive line edge at +750 is quite
plus
good odds.
+750?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, they have safety at +600. I do not think the Seahawks view safety as a need for them. I don't even have a safety on my list.
Wait, really? You don't have Malachi Starks as an option?
No.
You did no research. Okay. Fine.
I don't know why.
It's basically wide receiver.
Wide receiver +400, safety +600, tight end +600, defensive line edge +750, quarterback +1500.
When you're calling out individual positions, the odds are going to be pretty good no matter what.
Right. Linebacker +1500, quarterback +1800, running back +8000, kicker, punter, long snapper +25000. Yeah, if the Seahawks draft a kicker, punter, or long snapper, or if they draft a long snapper number with their first round pick and number, I am going to just, my mind will be boggled. I don't know what I'll be able to tell you.
Incredible that they included that. I agree with you. I think safety is more likely than you're saying, though. I think there is a possibility that Malachi Starks could be the pick, and I could see the Seahawks being interested in him. Offensive line, I would just be, I feel the exact same way as you, that when I see it,
I mean, ESPN draft predictor has it at a 1% chance the Seahawks take him.
People are thinking about it in terms of team need and not enough about what has this team told us, right? They drafted all of these players with the intention. Well, James Carpenter was a guard, right?
I can't remember if he was drafted as a guard or not, but I think so.
It was a later pick. And that was also quite a long time ago. I would be very shocked if they took a guard in the first round of this draft. So who are some of the other options?
All right, well, let's go through this in terms of position groups. And I went through it using the ESPN analytics predictor and the players they consider most likely to be drafted at pick 18, which granted does not necessarily mean that the Seahawks are drafting them. That could be a trade, hypothetically. But they have the single most likely pick at pick 18 to be Matthew Golden, wide receiver from Texas.
Tell me about Matthew Golden.
Speedster. So ran a 4.29 40, played his first 2 years at Houston with modest production, then led Texas last season with 987 yards and nine TDs. He's number three in playmaker score, and ESPN's draft day predictor gives him a 35% chance of being out there when the Seahawks pick at 18.
Okay. For the wide receivers,
Tetrarone McMillan. Do you want to get excited now?
No, he's not going to be there. He's going to the Cowboys, pick 12. I went through, I listened to so many draft podcasts while I was flying back and forth to New York. And let me just tell you, Todd McShay, there's information. Not a fun hang. Not a fun hang of a podcast.
The draft day predictor gives you a 20% chance of being available at pick 18.
On the flip side, Danny Kelly and the Ringer NFL Draft Show, very fun hang. Information pretty low, but very fun hang. If the two could be married, I think you could end up with a pretty solid show. I would be very surprised if Tetrarone McMillan were there. And it felt like there was a little bit of, the winds were blowing against Tet for a second. And I think he fell about as far as he's going to. If he's there, the Seahawks should draft him. There's
so we're
no
sure the Cowboys are not taking Shedeur Sanders.
We are 100% sure they're not drafting Shedeur Sanders.
I don't think you can be 100% sure about anything involving Jerry Jones. That's my position.
He's got a lot of trades in the works. The Shedeur Sanders, the unfortunate thing for the Seahawks that happened with this draft is it wasn't last year's draft. And where they're sitting, you know, Byron Murphy was picked 16 last year, I want to say, 17?
16 sounds right.
And by being the second defensive player taken in the draft last year, just the amount of quarterbacks that went ahead of him, all of the teams. And this was not a thing we thought the day before the draft, right? Nope. It's important to remember, we didn't think Michael Penix, we didn't think Bo Nix were going to be taken before the Seahawks drafted. So,
and that worked out amazingly for a team from the NFC West. And that team was the LA Rams.
I know. It's fine. It's fine.
Was it though? When the Rams drafted two guys who were better than Byron Murphy the second last season on the defensive line.
Jared Verse, who we're upset about, but
is it?
Yes.
But the point is that Braden Fiske was like someone who is a completely comparable player to Byron Murphy the second and who's way more productive as a rookie.
We are going to see about Byron Murphy.
I'm not ruling off Byron Murphy the second. I'm just saying it wasn't an ideal start compared to the LA Rams draft, which is the reason the LA Rams won the NFC West and the Seahawks didn't. The draft is that was the difference. They weren't that. Finished tied in the standings. I don't think that's a controversial take.
I think that's a little oversimplifying it. And if you don't remember who the villain is the Seahawks season, it's Ryan Crubb. It's not Byron Murphy. We've all agreed every single problem that happened with the Seahawks last year is Ryan Crubb's fault, and it is now fixed. Don't you remember?
It was weird how Ryan Crubb like took a hammer to Chenna Nwosu's knee in training camp, but you know,
defense wasn't the reason. If you ask me, it's probably Geno Smith's fault. But no, it's fine. If Tetrarone McMillan is there, they draft him.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the case. He's strong as a freshman in the deep Jed Fish receiving core at Arizona, then had exploded for 1,400 yards, 10 TDs as a sophomore. And his production didn't drop at all last season, even though Arizona was not as effective. And Noah Fifita was not as effective. Consensus All-American, number two in playmaker score on ESPN behind Travis Hunter. Danny Kelly has him ranked fourth overall among all prospects, excluding nobody with a comp.
I mean, he easily could have been a top five pick. Again, the only reason, it's stupid fucking NFL team bullshit that has pushed Tetrarone McMillan down the draft board. because there's this idea that he doesn't care enough about football. And I even heard somebody saying today, again, on the Todd McShay show, they were like, when Jed Fish was there holding him accountable, stuff like that, before Brant Brown came and was their head coach, that then it was like Jed Fish kept them in line, but Brant Brown couldn't. Then Tet was running the show. But if the stats are the same and Noah Fifita was much worse, that seems to me like Tedrell McMillan had an even better season in year two, right?
That's how it seems to me too. You're
again,
three, but
it is stupid NFL team bullshit. And whoever ends up with him, if he does fall to pick 10, 12, you know, if he falls to the Cowboys at pick 12, that is a fucking steal, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's individually that likely, but he, you know, he's still reasonably likely. The other wide receiver worth talking about in the first round is still Combs' own Emeka Egbuka, who was not as productive as I was expecting to be. Part of it, I think, is just that Ohio State, like, it's so much more of a kind of like consistent short passing attack. Like JSN's numbers during his monster season were not as good as I was expecting them to be.
Well, especially Chip Kelly being the coordinator, right? Like, that's a...
Yeah. But even if you go back to Egbuka's big sophomore year, it was pretty similar. 9.72 relative athletic score, which is something we're going to reference a lot when we have it. That ranked ninth among wide receivers. So that's, you know, very similar to, if you go back to the third Belton brother Zach Whitman's work with Three Sigma Athlete, kind of compiling the testing scores. And not all good athletes are good players, but nearly all good players are good athletes. 2,000-yard seasons, although it did take 16 games to get there in 2024.
That's incredible.
He's
played
ninth.
a full NFL season.
Throws off the stats considerably. Number five in playmaker score, although I would say in a different tier than McMillan and Golden. I would say 18 is frankly too high for Egbuka, but Danny did rank him the number three wide receiver, comped him to Chris Godwin and highlighted his blocking ability, which is something that surely will appeal to the Seahawks in their scheme.
I would still be happy if they drafted Emeka Egbuka.
I would like to
very
move down a few spots and draft Emeka Egbuka.
I do not. Obviously, number one goal in the draft. Number one, I think John Schneider goes into every draft thinking to himself, move down is the option. Maybe when they had the Devin Witherspoon pick, that wasn't exactly their goal.
I mean, it's been a long time since he's traded down in the first round. Partially, I think the market for trading up is not as robust as it once was. And certainly, yes. This year's market is remarkably unrobust.
It almost, because John Schneider liked trading down so much before, that he's comparing himself to his past successes.
Possibly.
And he's basically just like, well, we're not getting as much as we used to, right? For doing something like this. Therefore, it doesn't feel like it's worth it. It's probably still worth it.
It's definitely still worth it. But other teams are not as dumb as they used to be.
In general. But like, even if the package isn't as significant, because I think great pick-wise, was this you who did the study, or is this Ben, like, where the best draft picks were to have in the entire draft? And it's something like the 25th pick in the draft is the best pick to have.
Well, I think it's like the 40th pick is the best pick to have.
I thought the one extra year was helpful, though.
I guess that is true. So I don't remember specifically what that said. But either way, there definitely is a sweet spot towards the late first round, early second round that the Seahawks did exploit for a long period of time and have had a more difficult time exploiting.
They also never ended up with good players. Like, maybe in the second round, but like the amount of just consistent first round busts that they had in that range, including,
Bruce Irvin was a trade down, wasn't he?
I don't know if he was. He must have been. But also, like, Bruce Irvin was fine.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that preserving.
I get the feeling
amazing...
a different draft pick was maybe more important in that draft.
I can't think of what it might have been. I can't think of any two that it might have been. Maybe even three. I don't know. Seahawks that year. From Philadelphia, they traded down three spots from 12 to 15. The Eagles did make out fairly well in that trade. They took Fletcher Cox.
Oh my God!
Again, overall, the math favors trading down, even if individual results may not have.
It's also
that.
A nice reminder of how old we are. But yes. I'm thinking more of like first round running back around that range, first round off ball linebacker around that range, first round lineman who could barely play, who ended up with a lot of value from starting games in that range. That was kind of like that. That was.
Did they even trade down for Jordan Brooks?
I don't know if they traded down, but I'm just saying they haven't been able to exploit the back half of the first round in the way that some other teams have.
That's true,
It's
especially considering the following pick was Patrick Queen, is one always remembers.
It's part of why the roster has been so devoid of talent. Like, they're having to basically rebuild the talent on the rosters because of the trades that they made, but also how badly they did in that range.
I would say in the first half of the Schneider Carroll era, that even when some of those late first round picks didn't work out and they traded a lot of them away, they were able to make up for it in subsequent rounds. And then there was a stretch 2019 through 2021 where they just didn't.
They also lit a lot of those draft picks on fire by trading them to them.
In the early stage?
Or are you checking out the
Jamal Adams stage?
Jamal Adams, Sheldon Richardson, right?
Yeah. Yes, without question. So,
okay, what other positions?
God, the 2021 draft. So the second most likely player, according to the ESPN.
We were all at home. We didn't know what we were doing.
The ESPN Analytics Draft Today Predictor Model is Michigan tight end Colston Loveland.
I think he's gone.
50% chance, according to ESPN, that he's out there. Was their second leading receiver during the national championship season, playing at tight end alongside Seahawk A.J. Barner, and then had more than twice as many yards as any other Michigan receiver last season. He was guy. He was receiver.
Unrelated to this. I am highly skeptical. Also, there was Bryce Underwood, like, spring stats. Not great. Not great. When you're counting on a true freshman quarterback, not a great, great idea. But the people who are really, really up on Michigan because of their freshman class, just be careful. That's a word of advice. Be careful.
Picking a tight end in the first round has historically been a very bad idea, because even though the best tight ends certainly merit first round picks, the ability for us to identify who the best tight ends are in a given class ahead of time has not been very good. And so you see that the greatest tight ends in NFL history have often been drafted in the third and fourth rounds, in the cases of like Gronk and George Kittle.
So it's a reactionary league. And I think the thing that we're seeing is running backs have much higher value, which I guess we'll get to next. Running backs have much higher value in the 2025 draft than they have in many drafts before this, right?
Yeah.
Ashton GT. Well, I guess Bijan was what, pick 5, 6?
God.
They massively overdrafted Bijan too. But Ashton GT will be drafted probably higher than most running backs for the last 6 years.
He was
years.
8.
Bijan was 8. Okay. So yeah, Ashton GT almost certainly will be the highest drafted running back since Fournette? Somebody like that. But Saquon Barkley has made NFL GMs forget that running backs don't matter.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I was listening to a conversation where they're like, oh, the Cowboys got all this production from Rico Dowdle, so obviously they should draft a running back. And I'm like, how is that your logic? Your logic is they got a lot of production from Rico Dowdle, so they should draft a running back?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
But the Saquon season and the Eagles championship, I'm sure Saquon deserves some part of it, but also the Eagles defensive line and defense in general deserves, like, if you're squares of the pie, like Cooper DeJean deserves an also a large part of that, right?
So what does this have to do with tight ends again?
What I'm saying is that tight ends are being overvalued this year because it is a reactionary league, and Brock Bowers had one of the best rookie tight end seasons of all time.
Yeah.
And I really think, I mean, teams like tight ends, right? You get to draft a white guy in the first round. They love doing that. But drafting tight ends very high is a direct reaction to Brock Bowers' season last year. And I think Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren have Brock Bowers to thank for where they're likely going to be drafted. I have an overall perspective about the Seahawks draft. I guess we'll talk about at the end.
I did not realize Colston Loveland was from Idaho.
I do think if he was there, I mean, if Tyler Warren's there, the Seahawks are drafting Tyler Warren, but it's not going to happen. If Colston Loveland is there, I do think Mike
McDonald...
Draft day
prediction gives him a 10% chance of being available at that spot.
I think Mike McDonald, obviously we know his background at Michigan, but at the same time, I'm like, he also has another Michigan tight end on the roster who had a pretty good rookie season. So...
I mean, they're going to play a lot of 12 personnel. I don't think I don't think it's inconceivable. Again, it's just a position I would rather draft in the second or third
This
round.
is the only position that they are benefiting from the players being, last year it was quarterbacks. This year, although all the quarterbacks kind of look pretty good, but this year it is tight end. That's the only place that the Seahawks being in the place that they are benefiting from some position being probably overdrafted.
Okay. I mean, the nice thing about Tyler Warren is, if it doesn't work out at tight end, you can just move him to quarterback.
I love Tyler Warren. But also, I can imagine a world that Tyler Warren is not a good NFL player.
Of course. All right, so the running back who's on this list and is third in terms of chances of being taken at pick 18, according to the draft day predictor, although none of these are more than 10%. Like there's, once you get to this point in the draft, it is certainly a crapshoot, is North Carolina's Omarion Hampton. And now this probably would appeal more to Pete Carroll than the current Seahawks regime. For Danny Kelly, he plays like he quote has a quote goal of running through a mofo's face every time he touches the ball. More positively, a 9.7 relative athletic score, number four overall, and a 75% chance of being out there, according to the draft day predictor model.
If the Seahawks draft Omarion Hampton, we riot.
Mean, the thing about this draft is not only are there running backs who are going to go high, there's considered to be an extraordinarily deep group of running backs, which I don't know if that's, it'd be interesting if that's kind of a product of some of these running backs staying in school longer because you're getting paid more often in college now than you are in the NFL as a running back. I
think
haven't
it's
looked into that
randomness.
specifically.
I think it's randomness that there's a deeper group.
It's a great year to draft a running back in the third or fourth round. There's been reports that the Seahawks are open to trading one of their running backs. It seems likely that's Ken Walker, the third. I
The
would welcome a Ken Walker, the third trade.
open to trading time period, the players who I've seen so far, Jameson Williams, the Lions are open to trade like for a first round pick plus, and I'm like, good luck. God, who else? There's another player that was like teams open to trading this player. Teams are open to trading any player if you're willing to way overpay for that player. That's it. That's the report.
But in practice, that's not what that means. What that means is come make us an offer.
I do not. Yeah, but no, the price for Ken Walker is still higher than any team is going to give them. Ken Walker will be a Seahawk after this draft.
Ooh, I don't know. I might be willing to bet you on
Done. $1 million.
that. Yeah, I can afford that right now. It's
I
an
think you can. The
I don't think anyone can at this point.
If Ken
They're
Walker
using
is
US
still
dollars.
on the Seahawks by the end of this draft, you have to watch the greatest movie filmed in Seattle history,
Okay.
which we'll talk about later.
Deal.
But I don't have to do anything.
You have to watch it again.
Is Andor out? Is that out today?
I thought it was yesterday, but apparently it's not yesterday. But it's sometime in the very near future if it isn't already. And let
Apparently, it's
us.
not yesterday, is one of my favorite sentences.
Or at the number four most likely draft pick at pick 18. This is not necessarily for the Seahawks.
I've
We
got
should
some
note this
breaking news for
caveat with
you.
it.
It's
What?
yesterday.
Oh, it was yesterday. Okay. Fair enough. I thought that meant I didn't see enough talk about it. I thought that meant it was today, but no, I'm excited. I'll watch
Yesterday.
that later
I think two
since
people,
we're recording early.
three episodes at a time, you know?
It's a lot to get through. Number four is Ole Miss quarterback Jackson Dart. Do you think that there's a chance the Seahawks take Jackson Dart with the 18th pick?
I think there's 0% chance.
I don't think it's zero, but I don't think it's I would take the under on the 7 or 8% that the draft day predictor. Again, that's now that's any team. That could be a trade team trading in to get Jackson Dart at pick 18.
Nobody is trading in the trade. This is the thing, we could be wrong.
We know we're going to be wrong. We just don't know where we're going to be wrong.
We could be wrong about quarterbacks, is what I'm saying. The general consensus seems to be Shadur is possibly 21 to the Steelers, but also maybe a good chance that he falls out of the first round completely. And it's so funny that they only give a 10% chance of Shadur being there. He's going to be there when the Seahawks pick.
I mean, now some of this, it's like based on if I switch over to the by player model, It's based on where they have them in the, I don't know, Kuiper and Reed apparently still have him number 9 in their mock draft. So,
Who, Shadur?
yeah.
I mean, every single report has been that the Saints are. I bet when Mel Kiper updates that, even I think he was saying on his podcast yesterday that he didn't think the Saints were drafting Shadur.
Right. And yeah, I don't know when that most recent update was.
I'm pretty sure. Again, another podcast. I listened to the entire top 10 podcast from Mel Kiper. But that's not happening. Shadur will be there when the Seahawks pick. The unfortunate thing for the Seahawks is there's probably not enough demand to come and get him. I think the thing that maybe we underestimate in draft coverage is the hurting that happens with players. And right now, it feels like the sort of like mock drafts or how people are viewing chalk is it's really spread out. There's like a few wide receivers, a couple of tight ends, a few offensive linemen, a couple of edge rushers, a quarterback, a running back, right? It's spread out completely. But a situation could happen where four edge rushers go in a row, and then all of a sudden, Shamar Stewart is a top 10 pick or a pick 13 or something like that. There could be a situation where there's a player who's not necessarily seen in that range who all of a sudden moves up because teams are like, oh, fuck, we have to go get this position right now. And I don't think that's going to be the case with quarterback because there just aren't enough of them for there to be a run on it. And it seems like, again, to the outside, the teams that are interested in quarterbacks, basically the Browns, the Giants, the Saints, are not excited enough about Jackson Dart. Some of them might even like Tyler Shook better, are not excited enough about Jackson Dart or Shadur to say, or the Steelers, to say, we're going to go get all these players right away. Like, I don't think there's going to be like a run on quarterbacks in the same way that there will be. However, edge rusher or something like that, tackles, that could be something that teams all of a sudden, it's like a few of them start going, and then all of a sudden there's a snowball effect of like, crap, we have to go get this player now rather than waiting till the second round to get this player.
Shedeur Sanders rates a tiny bit ahead of Jackson Dart in the Aaron Schatz projections on ESPN, both considerably behind Cam Ward, unsurprisingly. Dart like statistically looks better to me. Sanders, I didn't realize his like QBR was kind of meh last season. He was like 16th and not very good at all in 2023. One thing I did wonder, like I have seen it suggested, like, well, you know, Shadur got bailed out a lot of the time by Travis Hunter, who, you know, is the consensus number one prospect in this draft. And it was interesting that their number two receiver, Lejonte Wester, who ESPN has that same the playmaker score ESPN Shots model has as a day three sleeper, totaled nearly as much EPA and more on a per target basis than Travis Hunter did. So not that that's any knock on Travis Hunter, but more that like it wasn't just the Travis Hunter show.
I would love for their this court. I would be so excited if the Seahawks drafted Jackson Dart.
It would certainly be interesting. Now we should probably talk here about John Schneider confirmed that they are getting calls on Sam Howell after signing Drew Lock, but said, quote, we're not there yet as far as their willingness to trade him. So another one, I don't think a trade is as likely as it is with Ken Walker the third, but I do think it's possible.
Single call. When I've done this before, when people are like, oh yeah, I'm like, everybody's hitting us up about this right now. Single person can be calls on Sam Howell. I don't think there are very many teams, like a seventh round pick, maybe for Sam Howell.
Yeah, maybe a sixth, four, a seventh. The Seahawks don't have a sixth currently. I could see that.
They are
All
not
right.
getting calls on Sam Howell. Nobody is going to this draft being like, we've got one Sam Howell over everybody. That is not happening.
Our next position is edge, where the most likely Seahawks pick, according to the draft day predictor model, is Marshall's Mike Green. A standout at the Senior Bowl, had just 5.5 sacks between Virginia and his first year at Marshall before exploding for 17 as a fourth-year junior to lead the NCAA. He's number three in sack seer predictions from Aaron Schatz and ESPN behind Abdul Carter, of course, the consensus number two prospect in this draft. And I have this written as Shamar Stewart, but I'm almost certain I have that wrong now that I need to double check that who they have as number two here. But I think someone else who will be off the board in all likelihood. No, it is Shamar Stewart is number two. That's interesting, just based on his kind of measurables. So if we talk about Shamar Stewart, 4.5 career sacks at Texas A&M in 3 years, but a perfect 10.0 relative athletic score. So kind of a fascinating measurables over actual productivity prospect. I would say that personally, I tend to lean more towards productivity, but you can't dismiss that measurables clearly are important in predicting success, as you see in that sacks ER projection. Well, dynamite drop in, Monty.
I didn't know if you're going to talk about other edge
Okay, the
rushers.
other edge in consideration here is Georgia's Michael Williams, who had limited statistical production as well, 14 total sacks in 3 seasons. He's number 5 in sacks here, but with some injury caveats about potentially that may have affected his most recent season and then also his combine performance.
Lot of edge rushers in the like late first round, early second round range, who again could catch fire. You know, there could be a situation where James Pierce Jr. right now is kind of considered closer to the end of the first round. All of a sudden, people could be excited about it, right?
I have him as a second round possibility. The predictor model gives him about a 25% chance of being there still at pick 50 when the Seahawks come up again.
I'd
He's
be
sixth in
pretty
sacks
surprised
here,
though.
ran the best 40 for any edge of the combine, 9.4 relative athletic score.
Who is first in sacks here? What is like the top six, seven?
Abdul Carter.
Well, okay, yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Then Stewart. So Abdul Carter's at 28. Shamar, these are sacks for your first 5 seasons, is what the target is. Shamar Stewart is second at 25.2. Mike Green is third at 23.9. I don't know if I want to pronounce Donovan's last name from Boston College without having tried it before. 19.9. Michael Williams, fifth, 19.6. James Pierce, sixth, 19.3. Jordan Birch from Oregon, seventh, 18.6.
I mean, it's a deep edge class. And again, those players could be moved up. The Seahawks are going to come out of this draft. They're going to draft an edge rusher.
I mean, if
Whether
you don't
it's,
do it in the first 2 rounds, then I don't understand the point.
I think they probably will do in the first 2 rounds.
I think it's a very good chance. I don't
I
think
would
for
say,
sure they will. I do think it's better than what was it, plus 800 odds or 750 odds that that's their first pick. I think
again,
that.
they're thinking this, the odds are thinking too much about what the Seahawks have and not enough about what the Seahawks want to have,
I
which
agree.
is all of the edge rushers.
And just a star edge rusher, to your point. Like they have a deep group of edge rushers, but none of them has yet broken out. You think Boye Mafe has?
I feel like, I don't know. They've got, I mean, they do have DeMarcus Lawrence, who is like one of the best edge rushers in the league not that long ago, but
But it was long ago. It
literally, like
wasn't that long
he is
ago.
a quote unquote star edge rusher.
Sure.
He's like one of the most famous ones. But
Well, partially because he keeps talking.
the so my overall perspective on the Seahawks, I feel like edge rusher is a good place to talk about this. The thing that I keep thinking about is you hired the coach. I really think they are going to try to tool up Mike Macdonald with as much as they humanly can, unless somebody falls.
Should we talk about it the next position then?
Sure. Cornerback.
No.
Oh.
Linebacker.
Oof.
Jahan
They're
Campbell.
not drafting a linebacker.
Do you not know about Jahan Campbell?
I do not buy that they would draft a linebacker in the first round
You
again.
know that he might be an edge rusher in the NFL, right?
I mean, sure, if Jahan Campbell is an edge rusher in the NFL, then he's not a linebacker.
But okay. He can do both. You're allowed to do both, actually. It's in the rules. And one
Okay.
of the things that Mike Macdonald excels at is using players in a variety of different situations.
If it's Jahan Campbell, that's different. But like,
So, draft day prediction gives him a 38% chance of being out there, a 9.8 relative athletic score, which is second among off-ball linebackers. Had 117 tackles and 5 sacks last season. He was recruited as an edge rusher before moving to off-ball linebacker, in part because of Alabama's depth at edge rusher, which at that point included, among others, Will Anderson. So,
it feels a little bit like if you're good enough at being a rush edge, you're going to find a way to get there in college, or you're not. I mean, granted, it's Mike Macdonald. I'm sure he's very confident in his ability in taking a player and moving them, but it seems a little strange to take a, I don't, calling it a project isn't exactly right, but to
but like in
find
terms
somebody.
of pure talent, Jahan Campbell is considered a much better prospect than the edges.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, spoiler alert, he is on my list of guys I would rather take than trade down.
You would be excited about it. Jahan Campbell's it.
I mean, he's number 11 on Danny's big board, and I think he's the perfect kind of Mike McDonald player. And like, just a generic edge is like, you can find those guys. So the
It's
other,
Boye Mafe is a generic edge, right?
yeah,
But like Boye Mafe is an important and valuable player to the team.
without question, and they got him in the second round, which is a great place to draft edges.
Okay.
The other defensive player on this list, since offensive linemen, we has still not come up yet. Or the, I'm sorry, the next defensive group on this list.
When we talked to offensive linemen first, basically.
We did, but we should go through those guys a little more. Is Oregon defensive tackle Derek Harmon, who is a Michigan State transfer who had 5 sacks last season after 3.5 and 3 years with the Spartans. I would be surprised if they went defensive tackle in the first
No
round
way.
again.
No way they're drafting a defense tackle in the first round.
Our the other defensive position is cornerback. The only guy that Draft Day Predictor has is reasonably likely.
Will Johnson, there's just nothing. There's not a percentage chance. They're that confident that he's going ahead of the Seahawks.
I mean, he's on here. It's 2%. He's,
Really?
you know. I at some point we had to cut it off, I guess is what I'm telling you. They have Jahdae Barron from Texas, who is, what's his odds of being out here at this spot? Only about 15% chances of being out there. So he's rated higher, you know. In the same range, but Will Johnson, for some reason, they have is less likely to make it to that spot. Don't ask me the logic on that one. A relatively poor 8.63 relative athletic score, which ranks just 19th among cornerbacks, based primarily on his 5'11" height. Danny Kelly comped him to Trent McDuffie. Still, this doesn't feel like a very Seahawks-y pick to me. I mean, obviously, the Pete Carroll emphasis on big corners has changed a little bit, but I still think Judge Schneider retains some of that as well. So I think quarterback's a spot they're going to go at some point, possibly high, but I don't know that it's going to be in the first round.
It's maybe unlikely that Will Johnson is available there. If he is there for the Seahawks, and if this is somebody who Mike McDonald, again, having spent time at Michigan, if he's
Yeah.
excited about, I wouldn't be shocked if the Seahawks had him targeted,
No,
right?
I think that makes sense. Yeah,
So
I just
I don't feel
didn't
like
discuss
they'll
him because of the
move up in this
likelihood.
draft, but he is somebody who I could see the team being excited about. And again, I think it is going to be a defensive player. I think the first pick that the Seahawks make in this draft is going to be a defensive player.
Well, you got a chance to make some money.
And I mean, we talked about this before where you were like, you hire a defensive coach, so you don't have to take those players. Unfortunately, that's just not how it works. When you hire Liam Cohen, you're like, let's go get a running back after. Like the teams who have the offensive minded coaches, when you hire Ben Johnson, it's like, go get him a tight end, go get him an offensive lineman to be able to do his things, right? Because sometimes it's not just about the position
Adequacy.
coach. It's not just about taking mediocre players and making them great. Yes, that too, but it's also about finding great players and putting them in the right position to become excellent. Does
Yeah,
that
I
make
think that's
sense?
fair. Yeah.
And so I do think that
And it
still.
wasn't like that the Seahawks should be investing nothing in defense
No, I
at
mean, they have a ton
position.
of picks. They're going to be investing across the board. They're going to be investing a shitload everywhere, right? Throughout this entire draft. But I just have a gut feeling that for the Seahawks, wide receiver is the one that still stands out. I do think there are wide receivers later that they can go and find in the second round. Who, I mean,
Yes.
Emeka Buka could, does he have a chance of being there at pick 50?
Let me look that up. I don't think I studied that originally. No.
There's a Emeka Buka, there's
Like a
Luther Burden,
3% chance.
there's Jaden Higgins, there's Jalen Noel. Like there are players. Same with tight
Yeah,
ends.
we've got some of these guys on the list.
Mason Taylor is possibly there. Edge rushers, Nick Scorton. Like there are these types of players who could be there at the later picks. And so I do feel like I don't know, maybe you're right about Jahad Campbell, but just when I look at it going through the draft, they need some bit of surprise to happen. If you assume that I'm looking at this is the tankathon draft, right? The first four is chalk right now. I don't feel like that's changing. Gene T, Mbeu, that's happening. 5-6 or whatever, it's as far as people are concerned right now. And it says Will Johnson at 13 to Miami. I did see a thing that they're excited about Malachi Starks today, which for the Seahawks would be great if a safety's drafted ahead of them. If you're saying that you don't think the Seahawks would prioritize safety, that's great. But then, honestly, almost every single person we've talked about, except for Jahad Campbell and Matthew Golden, are drafted ahead of the Seahawks in this draft. Because after that, it's Amarian Hampton. It's Shedeur Sanders.
That's okay.
Walter Nolan. But somebody from that range is going to be there. It happens every year.
Yes.
We felt this way about JSN a couple of years ago. Where it's like, it would be so exciting if JSN was there. And so many times they've been there and the Seahawks haven't drafted that player. Even though, you know, Cooper DeJean was there, right? The second round pick, wasn't he? Maybe he happened in between those picks. But like there are players who are somebody from that range, generally considered to be ahead of the Seahawks, is going to be there when the Seahawks pick at 18.
And yeah, DeJean is between the Seahawks picks.
It'll be fascinating to see what they end up doing. But I do think, I guess what you're saying about edge rushers is if they can go find the person, they can let Mike Green get drafted. They can let Shamar Stewart get drafted. They can let these players get drafted because they can go in the second round and find that player.
Right.
So maybe it's Jahad Campbell. I mean, I don't know. You probably don't go back and draft an edge rusher with the next pick if it is Jahad Campbell.
No.
I feel like you're probably undervaluing safety. And I do think that just knowing, obviously pointing back to Baltimore, but knowing how important Kyle Hamilton was to the Ravens, I could see that as something if they see Malachi Starks as having
Kyle
some
Hamilton
of that.
Was considered a top 10 prospect. Right?
I mean, Malachi Starks is awesome. Where is he at on the big board? Are you using Danny's?
Number 23 on Danny's big board.
Okay. Is there anybody on Danny's big board right now that is Jahad Campbell is it?
No, it's Tetrell McMillan, but...
No, but who's almost seems likely to be there.
Then yes, Jahad Campbell at number 11 would be the highest. Egbuka is 13, which is interesting.
You know he pushed him up because he's from Washington. Come on.
Yeah, I mean, we do.
We all know.
Okay, let's talk a little more about the offensive linemen before we get to this. So Kelvin Banks Jr. from Texas, 20% chance of being out there, was the winner of both the Lombardi and the Outland trophies, exclusively played tackle at Texas. A lot of thought he could move to guard in the NFL, and I think someone like that, and this is maybe what James Carpenter was as well, where the idea is he can come in and play guard from day one, and then if things go, you know, don't go well with Abe Lucas's health down the road, then potentially Banks could end up at right tackle long term. Like, that's the scenario I think that could make sense for the Seahawks drafting a guard in the first round where John Schneider sees it as appropriate value. The top interior offensive lineman, you mentioned Gray Zabel earlier. Draft Day Predictor gives him a 100% chance of being out there. 9.9 relative athletic score if you treat him as a guard after he played tackle at North Dakota State. He excelled at the Senior Bowl where apparently he primarily played center. And then Tyler Booker from Alabama, also 100% chance of being out there, played primarily at left guard with one start last season at left tackle. But these are guys who are expected to go late 20s, early 30s. These are really more if the Seahawks can trade down. Seems like the scenario where you would see one of them.
I don't think they're doing it. I think they're drafting those players later. Or it's Kelvin Banks. If Kelvin Banks is there, I think they'll probably do it.
So let's give a preference list. Who are you hoping among the somewhat realistic possibilities? According to Draft Day Predictor, not according to you, the somewhat realistic predictor possibility.
Will Johnson is out.
Yeah, again, he's not considered a realistic possibility by this.
And as Tet...
No, he is considered a realistic possibility.
I mean, that's goal number one.
Yes, I agree.
Yes, done.
Okay, and then who's number two?
You might have talked me into Jahad Campbell.
Oh, I still have Kelvin Banks Jr. number two. I'd have Campbell number three.
Okay, fine. I think Kelvin Banks is going to be gone.
And then I have trade down number four.
Behind those... I still think trade down should be number one. Are there any of these? I mean, Tet is the type of player who is important enough that you just take him wherever you are. I mean, that would be a pretty big slide. I think Kelvin Banks is. Jahad Campbell's like they're taking appropriate value. But again, if he's an off-ball linebacker, if he's not a pass rusher, it's a bad pick.
I agree with that. I also think, like, even if he's playing off ball linebacker, but he's blitzing regularly, Like, it's what the Seahawks envisioned Jamal Adams being. If Jamal Adams had been what they envisioned.
Well, he was a safety too. That was, I mean, that was an even worse perspective, but I guess I don't know. I'd be a little bit nervous about it. I'm okay with the idea of Malachi Starks also, though. Because again, I think safety is like, who are the safeties on the roster right now?
Well, they bring back last year's starters plus Kobe Bryant. I mean, again, I don't know that I would say that position is solved, and maybe even less to some degree than off-ball linebacker at this point, depending on what you think about Tyrese Knight, in sort of,
Was
the
it
long
Rayshon
term.
Jenkins here last year? Yeah, I mean it's Kobe Bryant, it's Julian Love. There's no Rayshon Jenkins. I think you're underestimating.
I just don't think the Seahawks are going to invest a first-round pick in that after the Jamal Adams situation.
Why?
Because it was a
They traded.
disaster, and
It
it
was a
really caused Mike Schneider
disaster
to get
because
fired.
they traded two first-round picks
I mean, I
plus
agree
paid
that it was
him.
much worse than drafting a cornerback or a safety at 18, but I just don't think they consider, like, the Seahawks are willing to invest in these positions when they consider guys like elite, elite prospects at their situation. I just don't see the argument that Malachi Starks is an elite, elite
They
safety
draft,
prospect.
I mean, I don't know if I really buy that. They drafted a fucking off-ball linebacker in the first round 3 years ago.
I mean, sure, at 29, and
I don't.
to fill what they thought was a need.
Not that huge of a difference. But when you look at the secondary right now, obviously, Devon Witherspoon is set at nickel, right? Requolen, they seem fine with, has been benched, was benched at various times last year, but.
Yeah, I'm going to give that a we'll see.
I think they like Josh Jobe, but it's still a little bit of like, if you're going into it, Josh Jobe, Nehemiah Pritchard,
The question is, it's a
Pritchett.
combination of what they need, what they want, and what the draft tells you. And you seem more confident that the draft is telling them that Will Johnson might be able out there than I am.
I'm not necessarily saying that he is. I think in order of likelihood for the Seahawks in this draft, I think secondary might be number one, most likely. But also, Matthew Golden, I think, would be fine too. It just feels to me more like they can go find a receiver who's.
Let's talk about the second round guys. You mentioned
Yeah.
Jaden Higgins and Jalen Noel, both from Iowa State, both around 75% chance of being out there at pick 50. Noel is seventh in playmaker score. Higgins is eighth. Noel is slightly better relative athletic score. The reason I would consider Higgins more likely is because Noel is considered almost exclusively a slot receiver, whereas Higgins is considered capable of playing both in the slot and on the outside, which I think is more of the Seahawks need. I guess we should have said this about when we were talking about Matthew Golden. Like, he feels like the long-term solution for the Marcus Valdes-Scantling spot on this roster, like someone to take the top off. Like, obviously, Marcus Valdes-Scantling is not that guy for the next 5 years. He's that guy for the next year. So that does feel like a position they could look to address. Ole Miss wide receiver Trey Harris is another reasonable possibility at the 50th pick, but he only has a 9.23 relative athletic score. So that's a little disconcerting. One of the arguments I think for trying to address offensive line earlier rather than waiting for those 50 and 52 picks is that there's not really many interior offensive linemen expected to go in that range. The one guy who is remarkably another Jed Fish 2022 recruit. Like, the Jed Fish 2022 recruiting class is going to go down. It's just an all-timer. Guard Jonah Savaiinea, who is 93rd on Danny's big board, but a 9.85 relative athletic score is a
The Jed
guard.
Fish 2024 recruiting class is going to change the course of football future.
Wow, there
So,
you go. I love it. If we're looking at the third round, guard Tate Ratledge from Georgia is someone I'd be looking at, a 10.0 perfect relative athletic score. So that, I don't know if they trust waiting until pick 82, but that would be someone else who would be on my list for the Seahawks. We talked about James Pierce Jr. The other person I wanted to talk about is Tyler Shough.
oh, yeah.
Because I did a lot of research on older quarterback prospects leading into the 2020, three draft when we thought the Seahawks might take a quarterback before taking Devin Witherspoon in that spot. And the consensus was that older quarterback prospects are a terrible idea.
Oh no. Okay.
And I do think that may be changing some because of
Every
NIL.
quarterback is an older quarterback prospect now.
Well, not every quarterback. I mean, Jackson Dart's a pretty standard full played 4 years. Shedeur Sanders, like the COVID years are phasing out. So we're not going to have as many older prospects as we had based on the combination of NIL and the extra years of eligibility. But like Bo Nix had a reasonably productive first season. Looks like he might have been a reasonable first round pick. He's interesting. But Bo Nix was like a starter on a good college team from day one. I think that's very different from the Tyler Shough story, where he didn't really establish himself as an elite college quarterback until his sixth year of college.
You have to get really deep in the Netflix algorithm to get to the Tyler Shough story.
Time will tell whether it's horrid or
Transferred a
not.
lot, the Tyler Shough story. Okay, let me ask you this question.
Probably into the microphone.
Bo Nix had what I mean led a team to the playoffs in his rookie season, right? Had a relatively good rookie year. We're factoring in when you think about rookie quarterbacks, you factor in natural progression. But do we think that is less of a thing to factor in? Like, is Tyler Shough what he is right now?
I think there's some progression. NFL experience does matter, but probably less than a quarterback who comes into the league at 22 or 23.
I don't, honestly, quarterbacks are just so difficult to. I guess the perfect quarterback is, how old is Cam Ward? Normal age. But
Know if I want to say normal age.
the perfect quarterback is somebody
He's
who both
22. He will turn
excelled in
23 in
college.
May. You know
Excelled
who he shares your birthday.
May 25th.
Yeah.
Wow, same year too.
You look terrible for age 22, I gotta be honest with you.
Wow, that
Ain't
hurts.
amazing how many children you have for age 22.
I look pretty good for 40, terrible for 22. Excels in college, but also has room for growth, basically.
Yes.
What were we talking about? Quarterbacks?
Yeah.
Okay. I just don't think the Seahawks are going to actually draft a quarterback in this draft. I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. They telegraphed what their plan is, and their plan is Sam Darnold plus Drew Lock. So it would have to be a pretty extraordinary situation
I
for
just,
them to do
but
that.
well, one of the things I want to say is like, there's a lot of like, well, the Seahawks haven't done this in the past. They haven't drafted a quarterback. They haven't rostered more than two quarterbacks. Like, sometimes shit changes. They've got a new offensive coordinator. They don't have the same head coach that they had for a long period of time. Like, the rules are different. Like, the past is not always guarantee of the future. Regress your opinion to the mean.
Let me just ask you, how much do you feel like John Schneider has changed that much? Because
I
I
mean,
feel.
certainly he's changed the way that he's drafted between 2021 and the last 4 years.
I think they've gotten a little bit less creative during that time period, but I don't know if they've changed all that much. They still drafted a lot of running backs relatively high.
I'm not disputing that, but it's not the only, that's not the only variable here.
There are things that John Schneider doesn't draft an interior offensive lineman in the first round. John Schneider drafts running backs high. John Schneider doesn't draft quarterbacks.
I think at some point John Schneider is, at some point I guarantee you that John Schneider is going to draft a quarterback. I don't know for sure it's going to be this year, but if you keep betting no on John Schneider quarterbacks, eventually you're going to be wrong.
I mean, I would be excited. Again, I would be excited about almost Jackson Dart, probably the
And I don't think they're
most.
going to take one in the first round or even the first 3 rounds. But do I think that they might take one in the fifth round? That they might take Will Howard? Yeah, I think they might take Will Howard, especially if they can get flip Sam Howell for a sixth with a seventh.
Sure. I'd be for it. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'd be for it. Do you want to bet on that too? $1 billion.
The joke is $1 million.
We already bet that?
Okay, so we have to up the stakes.
Yeah. Okay. So the Seahawks have, are we done talking about, are there any other positions deeper that you want to talk about?
No, I think that was it.
So I guess position wise, right? They have pick 18. So they have one. How many picks in the first four rounds? One, two, three.
They have six in the first four rounds because they have an extra second and an extra third. Now, what I would tell you is, again, failing the three guys, I would take at 18. My ideal scenario is I would love a scenario where they traded 18 and 52 and ended up with like two picks, like one in the late 20s or early 30s and one in the 40s.
Okay.
Because I think there would be the ability to take a guard, take one of these wide receivers like an Emeka Egbuka, and then still have pick 50 or 52 or which, you know, whichever of those two you keep to address the third position.
So moving back a little bit in the first round, and then are there teams who have this capital?
No. Having tried to make this trade repeatedly in the draft day simulator, I mean, you'd have to do two separate trades, basically.
You were basically looking around for a team that has like pick 28 and pick 40.
Right.
Which just doesn't. I mean, the Bears have 39 and 41. You'd need
That's a long ways down to go, but maybe if you made that trade initially 18 for 39 and 41, and then you used some of the some of your remaining picks to go back up from 39.
Is 18 for 39 and 41 a reasonable trade value wise?
I'd have to look at it.
I mean, I feel like I'd be down for it.
I think it's probably too little to get, is my sense.
That's what I'm asking. You think you'd need like a fourth in there too or something?
Right. Maybe a future pick. I love a future pick.
I mean, everybody wants a future pick.
Like, we all want a future pick.
But position-wise, is it basically with these picks that they have? So it's one first, two seconds, two thirds. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. With those five picks, assuming that the Seahawks make them all, is it, to me, it's wide receiver. These are what I kind of considered. They're not locks, but like almost certainly going to happen.
Actually, by the Johnson chart, the 39 and 41 are worth more than pick 18. So
done. Lock it in.
Well, I think then you'd have to give up something else, is what I'm saying. But obviously, by the analytics Chase Stewart chart, you're getting 22.3 points of value for 16.2.
Wide receiver, edge rusher, interior offensive line, secondary, second interior offensive line.
I'd be surprised if they drafted two interior offensive line. They've been pretty clear that they think that
tight end
center is set. You're saying for me to rank those?
Or no, like, is that the five picks? Not ranking them. Like, if they're making five picks, are those, obviously barring something crazy happening, something totally unforeseen happening, which is, we might not know the order of where these players are going,
right,
but is that generally, there are a lot of tight ends in the 50 to 90 range. There are a lot of edge rushers in the 40 range. There are a lot of wide receivers in the 40 range. There are a lot of interior offensive linemen a little bit later. Like, if it's third round pick, second round pick, interior offensive lineman, kind of leaves secondary as that first pick.
Yeah, but again, is there the right secondary player available at that pick? Yeah, I think that's about right.
Those positions, though.
Yes.
I mean,
it wouldn't shock me
if
off-ball linebacker got in there.
I feel like that's a fourth-round pick.
Maybe it is. I mean, maybe it is.
Maybe somebody can sneak in. But I do feel like edge rush with the second pick, I don't know. You want every pick to be between...
I know.
If you could just make all of the picks between 33 and 50. If you could just make every draft pick, give up all of your picks and just do those, you would have such a good team. Because you could kind of get it all right there.
Sounds like a tourism advertisement. The early first, second round.
I think
you can
it's
get
like,
it all right there.
In the first round, I think it is secondary or wide receiver. And I think the second round is edge rush and then possibly tight end.
You don't think interior offensive line in the second round? You think wait until the third round?
Maybe interior offensive lineman. And then, yeah, I think tight end is second round.
I don't know. I don't really know anything about the tight ends after Loveland and Warren.
People seem very excited about Mason Tyler from LSU.
Good for them.
I mean, he's mocked on here at 50 to the Seahawks. And then Jonah Savainia from Arizona. It is fun, though, because of the amount of capital that Seahawks have. I guess what is actually probably most likely is, obviously, there haven't been trades that have happened so far in this draft in the first round. There are going to be trades that happen in the first round. I think the Seahawks are going to be moving around with all of these picks. It's too many picks for them not to. And they're going to get phone calls. They're going to get phone calls from people who are going to be like, we want to move here or whatever. And it might be the kind of capital that, again, if they get excited about somebody who's a little bit ahead of them and they want to go up to 13, 14, 15, they have the capital to be able to do it. And that would be a situation that I don't know if it's a good decision, but I wouldn't rule it out. How about that?
Okay.
Because it does feel like where they're sitting, they're kind of in the like wait for somebody to fall range. But I don't know. There are a lot of people I'd be excited about.
There are multiple people I'd be excited about. They're probably going to draft Grace Abel at 18.
If they've, it'd be whatever. That would not be fun.
No, that's an eat your vegetables draft. All right, let's get into the rest of the podcast, starting with our toasts. Congratulations to Cal Raleigh, who became the 16th Mariners player to reach 100 career home runs by hitting one from each side of the plate Wednesday in Cincinnati. Congrats also to Dylan Moore, who was named AL Player of the Week after going 10 of 26 for a .385 batting average with three home runs and three stolen bases as the Mariners went 4-2 on their road trip in Cincinnati and in Toronto. Congrats to Gabby Williams, who helped Fenerbahce to the Turkish League Championship on Sunday. Excited to have her have that wrapped up and be in Seattle for the start of training camp. And then congrats to UW product Jalen Noel, who was named to the Old G League first team.
Hello.
Huskies continue their run of dominant G League guards.
It's so strange because I feel like the Mike Hopkins era, I just don't feel that strongly about the Husky players. Even though I watched a lot of the games, but I'm like, yeah, Jalen Noel, I liked him.
Wait, by the way, how do you feel about the idea of the Seahawks potentially having a Jalen Noel?
All Jalen Noel, it'd be pretty fun. I'm for it. It's also just a good name.
It is. Although it's harder to make the Noel concept stick in football. We're taking the week off from takes because you were traveling and because of the draft. Mariners, a strong start to their road trip, a poor start to their series in Boston, but they are, as we record this, leading 4-0 in the fourth inning.
Hello! I didn't have that on. I should have just turned
JP Crawford, three-run homer.
Whoa! Let's freaking go!
The first three-run homer of the season for the Mariners.
I spent way too much time listening to you talking about the draft. I should have been watching this baseball game.
Rowdy Tellez, all-time revenge series three games in Toronto. What if they made the whole season out of Rowdy Tellez playing in Toronto or build the dome for Rowdy Tellez?
I obviously saw none of the game yesterday, but like the amount that I kind of cared. And then I saw the score and I was like, all right, I'm fine. I'm good. Good to have not watched this, but I told Luke earlier today, Emerson Hancock's going to shut down the Red Sox. So prophecy confirmed.
Well, let's all remain calm. There's plenty of time remaining, but if Emerson Hancock can put together a second consecutive strong start after a really good one.
I told you after that first start, I was like, bring Emerson Hancock back. Let him cook. They sent him down too fast. It's so funny.
I think maybe they wanted him to get a reset.
They might have handled it well. I feel like the process with Dan Wilson is me hating Dan Wilson so viscerally to then eventually being like, okay, that was fine.
Even with the bunts?
Being bailed out. I feel like the bunts maybe went down a little bit on this road trip. Did they?
A little bit. I don't know. Maybe you just didn't watch as many games.
I watched a lot of it. They also were stealing a little tiny bit less, too. They cost themselves the game on. This was last Friday night, right? With all the runners that were out on the base paths. And I feel like that is the thing that makes me the most annoyed. Is I don't know if this is like an advanced stats thing, if advanced stats people are okay with people being out on the base paths, but making outs on the base paths is the most annoying fucking thing in the entire sport.
I mean, generally, I think that the numbers favor being less aggressive in terms of base running. So I don't think that is an advanced stats thing.
How often do you think Tristan Casas gets called Tristian?
Oh, well,
Some of the
not as
time
much
or all the time?
because he has the O, right, instead of the A.
Oh, okay, because he's Tristan.
I don't know if you're aware of this, by the way. Careful with the spoiler words, but the favorite currently on this Top Chef season is named Tristan, but with an
Hello,
E.
Tristan.
Yeah.
I
But
don't
he
like it.
probably gets Tristan a lot.
Okay, good.
He
Okay, can I do really fast? Okay.
has Trinidadian roots.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Really fast.
Emerson Hancock's melting down
Oh
right when I said
no.
it. No, he's fine. This is a 3-1 count. He's okay. He's got a little mustache going. Emerson Hancock's growing up right in front of our eyes. I said what I said. Six aces.
Are you streaming this on your second computer?
Yeah?
Okay.
You don't have a second computer to stream the Mariners on?
I mean, I guess suppose I actually do have a second computer I could stream the Mariners on.
What even are you doing? Just hoping
Following
to
the Celtics
give up
Magic score.
a 3-run homer. So Mateo is playing his first ever kid pitch baseball game this past weekend.
Where he was catching.
He caught in the first inning. There's
Okay.
a fairness chart with where people play throughout the game. So
These
like
people want to catch?
well every the only position that you're not forced to play is pitcher. People can opt out of pitcher. But if you like, you're not forced to play somewhere. But if you say no to playing there, then you basically like you have to sit on the bench. Is how the fairness chart works. I am not the coach of this team in any way, and shockingly, you wouldn't believe it.
Was
However,
there not a flame? Are you no
you
longer a
know,
monk?
listen, I had to get on that field one way or another, and they were like,
Oh.
"When our kids are hitting, we're gonna have an umpire from our team umpire for them." So basically, the other team umpires for them. We umpire for us. I actually think that's the right way to do it because you're always going to be a little bit harsher, I feel like, on your own kids,
Yeah.
weirdly. So anyway, I get all the rules. I go out. I'm umpiring, right? I mean, it's to a certain extent, it's just kind of normal baseball, except they're, oh, God damn it, Emerson. I jinxed it. It's all my fault.
Does he see a lot of second base runner?
No, he gave up a run.
Oh, okay. My scoreboard was a little behind.
The so anyway, I have all the rules, right? The only difference is the kids can't walk. So like if a kid pitcher throws four balls, then a coach comes in and throws to them, which is good because like you don't want to see kids. It's boring to see kids walking all the time, right? So I'm calling balls and strikes, basically, which actually means I'm calling balls. And our team, bases loaded, right? They get a hit. So the bases are loaded. They get a hit, 2-run score on the play. There's a runner on first and third. I'm there behind the plate, calling outs, balls, strikes, stuff like that. There's a hit. Mateo is the runner on third. It's a short chopper back to the mound. They throw it to the plate. The catcher steps on the plate. Mateo slides in, beats him. The throw beats him to the plate. I call Mateo out. The other team is celebrating. They're like, "What a great play!" The coach comes over. Who like threw the pitch because it was one of the coach pitches. He comes over and he was like, "Did he tag him?" And I was like, "No, the ball beat him." He was like, "The bases weren't loaded." My one time of umpiring, my first ever time umpiring, I forgot that the bases weren't loaded anymore. And I called my own child out at the plate.
How did Tay handle it?
He actually handled it okay because I don't think he knew exactly what the situation
Right.
was. But he
I
came
like that this
over.
is not, and sadly, that there are some stories out there of belligerence towards
Woo!
umpires in youth
Nasty
sports.
stuff,
This
Hancock.
is a polite reminder that you fucked up the rules. What an amazing story about humanity.
The other, I was just like, I was like, we could just leave it, whatever. You know, like nobody, they literally don't keep score. And the other team sent their kids back out because that it was partially because the other coaches were like yelling, "Throw home, throw home, throw home." And I got distracted by what they were doing. And they were celebrating when that got there instead of me being like safe. I was like, because I also was like, I was going to call him out if it was close. You know what I mean?
You will never look at Enrico Palazzo's performance the same way again after being humbled like this.
It was the most embarrassing moment. I went back out there proudly, though, after that. The catcher for the bottom of the fourth or whatever, the final inning for the other team. I called a ball, like the ball bounced in front of the plate and then rolled in. And I was like, I was like, I'm gonna have a big strike zone. This kid should be swinging the fucking bat. And the ball bounced and then rolled over the plate. The catcher was like, I think that was a strike to me. I'm like, thank you for the feedback, sir. Like, I appreciate your feedback. However, there's also a rule that if any parents question balls or strike calls, they're ejected.
Wow.
That's the coach's rules. So honestly, it's a lot of pressure as the umpire, though.
Yeah.
So that was my umpire corner. I was like, the only thing you could do wrong as umpire, I did wrong in my first game.
Well, George Kirby is set to throw a bullpen session at T-Mobile Park this week.
Hello.
But if Emerson Hancock keeps pitching like this, Mariners
we don't need
comfortable.
Him. If Emerson Hancock keeps pitching like this, then what?
They don't need to rush him.
Okay, they don't need to rush him.
Which, I mean, they're not. They're slow playing this. There's still several steps in this process. But again, that's good news. All right, Seattle Kraken.
Mother's Day clear purse. I'm sorry, but that's offensive. They're just like, moms love to carry shit into baseball games for their children.
I mean, it's not wrong, though.
Nah, not good.
I don't think it's for their children, necessarily.
A cool shoulder mousse.
I yes.
Moms get to carry all your crap into the game.
Seattle Kraken news. They fired Dan Bylsma after one season as head coach. Are you aware of this?
No,
is this
no
news
idea.
To you? Yeah, okay. There we go. It turns out, after all,
it's like like Buster on Arrested Development, thinking that their housekeeper's like favorite thing is the vacuum.
Oh yes, yes, that's good.
It's like moms love clear purses.
My objection to it is, like, we've made this ridiculous rule for you. Now let us give you something. Like, maybe we should have been giving it away from the start, since you're forcing people
only
to use
to
clear
moms
bags.
Though dads don't get them.
That is a good question. Are they only give you? It's got to be for everyone, right?
First,
I don't know.
10,000 moms get a clear purse. Their favorite thing in the world.
Love to be in charge of determining who's a mom.
You like clear purses? If you have to go to a Mariners game, it doesn't feel like an offensive giveaway for moms. What?
Wow.
You want a fresh clear purse? Fine. Not offensive, I guess.
Unfortunately, you will not be going to the game because you have youth baseball.
Oh, yeah, no. We wanted to go to the freaking shoulder moose game. A pink baseball hat would be more offensive. Okay.
That's not wrong.
Yeah. I actually think this is weirdly more offensive, but bye.
All right, anyways, Dan Bylsma fired after one season.
So we can't record during the day.
Yeah. It turned out, I mean, that was good. We got real-time mom feedback. So it turns out that Dan Bylsma was right. He should have stayed in Coachella Valley.
I feel bad for him, to be honest.
I mean, he does get the money, but yeah, the Firebirds without him finished fourth in the AHL Pacific Division. They're hosting the Calgary Wranglers in the first round of the Calder Cup playoffs, but unlikely to be the same kind of long run we saw for the Calder Cup last year. Simultaneously, the Kraken promoted Ron Francis to president of hockey operations and made assistant GM Jason Botterill their executive vice president and general manager, with Francis telling reporters that Botterill will have final say on roster decisions. So this is a little perplexing, because usually when the GM goes to president is with Jerry DePoto, it's like, congrats, you got this promotion. In this case, the Kraken themselves seem to be spinning it as, no, Rand Francis is not going to be doing as much now. Jason Botterill is the guy in charge of the front office.
I think he
office.
Failed his way up.
It does seem that way.
Wow. Congrats to Ron Francis.
I mean,
failing his way to the top, you know, it definitely comes with a pay increase.
It seems likely. It's interesting because, like, when Wally Walker
power,
became Sonics president, people still
bullshit.
Treated him as the GM. But I think the big difference there was, like, Wally had a business background. He was running the business operations for the Sonics in addition to overseeing the basketball side of the organization. And his office was with the rest of us business staff, not at the Furtado Center with the basketball staff. So there was a clear separation of time and duties. And I do think Rick Sund had a lot of autonomy to run the organization as he saw fit in that period of time. I mean, I guess we'll see how it plays out with Francis, but this is not exactly the new voice you were necessarily hoping for in the Kraken front office.
I think they wanted to fire him, but there's red tape to do that. There's baggage
perhaps.
And red tape. And
so
they
Botterill
just gave him more money because there is endless money to go around in professional sports franchises.
Yeah, we'll see when that NBA expansion team comes up. Oh, we didn't
wait,
put that in the
talk
notes.
About that, by the way.
Yeah, I forgot to put
that
in the
really good news. Fuck the Kraken. God, who cares?
Yes, Adam Silver was on the Pat McAfee show on ESPN and said that the
nothing
expansion
bad
process
happens on there.
will happen. They expect to begin formally this summer, which is, you know, the general timeline that we've hoped for, but the most specific, most concrete timeline. And then also, I think, encouraging that, you know, despite the stock market decline in the past few weeks here, that does not seem to be affecting the expansion timeline at this point. So good bits of news. Still a long ways to go.
It's done. Team's coming.
Not done.
But this
done.
Is the most definitive thing. Him saying overtime leagues expand.
What do you mean? He said that like 1,000 times. You don't know that he's said it because of the fact that I don't even bother to quote it because he's said it so many times. Because
that's all he says. I think this was a little bit more legit.
I do think it sounded more positive. I have not talked to anyone about that, but it was positive.
When do we get the Rowdy Tellez treatment from the Donovan Solano at-bats? When does he wake up one day and become Rowdy Tellez?
I guess when we play the Padres.
Okay, fair. It has to all be revenge.
Well, the good news is Donovan Solano has a lot of revenge out there.
That's
it's not
good,
like
yeah.
The Blue Jays were Rowdy Tellez's most recent team. Anyway, Jason Botterill, before becoming Kraken assistant GM, served as the GM of the Buffalo Sabres from 2017 through 2020. Coincidentally enough, his hire then came shortly after the Buffalo Sabres fired Dan Bylsma. So if you're Dan Bylsma, you do not want to see Jason Botterill come in as GM.
We've already played so many revenge series for Donovan Solano.
Probably true.
Played 3 revenge series already.
But how many of those games did he actually play in?
I guess like 2, right? We haven't played the Twins, right? Just San Francisco and Cincinnati. Okay. We've only played 2 revenge series.
Buffalo backslid by 16 points in Botterill's first season at the helm, then get back into playoff contention in 2029. Botterill was fired at season's end after ownership, Kim and Terry Pegula, who also owned the Bills, asked him to make hockey operations, quote, leaner during the pandemic, and he pushed back against those kind of staff reductions. So, you know, it wasn't strictly a performance issue.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Kraken finished.
Kraken wouldn't do it. When they want to get rid of somebody, they just promote them.
Not leader. That is, I mean, I guess they are leader. They had 2 assistant GMs before. Now they only have 1.
There we go.
I mean, Botterill has more experience. My bold prediction coming into the year was that they were going to make Alex Mandrycki the GM. Now I was implying then they were going to fire Ron Francis, but Mandrycki remains as assistant GM. The Kraken are 6th entering the draft lottery, will have a 7.5% chance at winning the number 1 pick, a 7.7% chance at number 2. They are most likely to stay 6th or drop to 7th with a 9% chance of sliding all the way to number 8 because 2 teams passed them via the lottery. I would say as we look back on the season, Shane Wright was the biggest success story with 19 goals and 25 assists at age 21. He finished 4th on the team in points, just ahead of Matty Beniers, kind of jumping him in the prospect rankings. But if you want to find out why, understand why Dan Bylsma was fired, I think the legitimate argument here after 1 season was that, you know, even though the Kraken hadn't been very good in 2023-24, their advanced stats were still quite strong. They were 11th in Corsi, which measures kind of your share of the shots at 5-on-5 full strength. This year they were 25th, and their shooting percentage went way up from 29th to 9th. That's the more random stat that you have less control over as a coach, and yet they still were worse as a team. So I do think there's a legitimate argument, but it's definitely not like this is what a good organization should be doing.
I honestly, he wanted to stay in Coachella Valley.
He did. He wanted no part of this. He knew better. The Kraken did also announce that his assistant coach, Jessica Campbell, who made history as the first female bench coach in NHL history, will be retained.
Okay, I was going to say.
Yeah, they didn't announce that they were letting her go. On the women's hockey front, the Professional Women's Hockey League, PWSHL, on Wednesday announced expansion to Vancouver as part of 2 additional teams that did not announce the other one, but Circling Seattle Sports reported last week, and the PWHL website accidentally leaked over the weekend that the PWHL is also expanding to Seattle after a well-attended
Hello.
exhibition game here last year. I guess it was a real game, but
Where are they playing?
I assume they will play at Climate Pledge. I don't know that for sure. Maybe they'll play in Kent, but we'll
All
see on
right.
that one. Stay tuned. All right, Seattle Sounders got a 3-0 win in their return home Saturday against Nashville. Danny Masovsky scored for the second straight game to open the scoring in the 19th minute. Peter De La Vega and Paul Rothrock also had goals before halftime. And the Sounders saw a clean sheet without the injured Jackson Reagan and Alex Roldan in the starting lineup. Roldan was able to play off the bench, as did Jordan Morris in his return from injury, and Albert Rushnak. Ryan Kent also came on for his Sounders debut in the 84th minute, as Stefan Fry recorded 8 saves to preserve the clean sheet. Sounders, despite their slow start, up to a tie for 8th in the West standings and 6th in goal differential, and a chance to move even this weekend visiting the Colorado Rapids, who are tied for 4th with an even goal differential, slightly worse than the Sounders. It's a good weekend all around for Seattle soccer. The Reign got a 1-0 win Friday in their rivalry match in the Cascadia Derby against the Portland Thorns. Ricky Maddie Dalian scored the lone goal, her first as a pro, in the win. She had 4 shots on target and now has 10 this season, second in the NWSL behind Barbara Branda, according to Sounder at Heart and their Ride of the Valkyries Reign coverage. The goal was assisted by Lynn Biondolo, who made our first Reign start and went 80 minutes. So continuing to work back towards full health. 4 saves by Claudia Dickey to preserve the clean sheet and 4 points. Reign now part of a 3-team tie for 6th in the standings and will face one of the other two Saturday, traveling to Bay FC. Bay FC made the playoffs last year in their first year of existence, so a nice measuring stick for the Reign's legitimacy as playoff contenders with this rebuilt roster. Seattle Storm training camp opens Sunday with media day on Monday. We will see when Dominique Malanga is ready to participate, but her season in France is over after Asvel lost their aggregate quarterfinal series to Land. Good news that even if it's not right at the start of training camp, should be relatively early on, and Malanga should have a chance to really pick up a lot of the offense and defense and contend for a spot in the rotation from day one. The other bit of Storm news, they placed Nika Mule and Jordan Horston on the suspended list after their ACL injuries over the offseason, ruling them out for the 2025 season, and then taking their spots off the roster and their salary off the team's cap. This was sort of expected. The one question was, the rule is your players can be placed on the suspended list if they're expected to miss at least the first 6 weeks of the WNBA season. There was some chance that Nika Mule might be able to get back toward the tail end of that, but it would have really been pushy it with her ACL injury. So, this is probably the wiser long-term course of play, and the Storm retain those players' rookie contracts for 2026. So, all right, UW men's basketball added former Indiana small forward Bryson Tucker is a transfer. Maryland native was the number 19 overall recruit in the 2024 class per the Risky consensus. Opened the season in a key role, averaging 18.8 minutes per game through January 11th, but then after dealing with a minor injury, shot just 37.5% in that span, including 1 of 16 on threes. And after dealing with a minor injury, played just 61 total minutes the rest of the schedule. Not, I got to say, a lot to like statistically in Bryson Tucker's freshman year at Indiana. He ranked in the 99th percentile per CBB analytics in his rate of non-two-point attempts and hit them at a 31% clip. Also, pretty low rates of steals and blocks. So even though the Huskies do have a need at small forward, I don't think my expectation is that Bryson Tucker will necessarily be part of the rotation, or at least a key part of the rotation.
What does UW baseball have to do?
What did they do last weekend?
7-3 in their last 10.
Okay.
5th in the Big Ten in the standings. It's the entire new Big Ten right up there at the top, and Iowa, or mortal enemies, Iowa.
Yeah,
and
it's almost as if baseball isn't a big deal, and college baseball is not a big deal in the Midwest.
Is it a big deal in Seattle, Washington?
No, but we're in the West region where it is a big deal.
College baseball is a big deal because we're close to Oregon State.
I'm just saying, when you say the...
Don't disrespect what they are doing on Montlake with UW men's baseball. Thank you.
won three of four last week and took two of three against Illinois, and then beat Seattle U 11-1 after beating them 22-0 the week before.
That's right, Seattle U.
I don't know. That was a home and home because this game was played in Bellevue, which is where Seattle U plays their home baseball games.
Really? Do they?
They do. Yeah, they don't.
Where?
I don't know. I don't know
it's
specifically.
Seattle U, buddy.
But it's not a
not
lot of
Bellevue
room.
U.
Not a lot of room for a baseball stadium
they
in the
have a
heart of
baseball
Capitol Hill.
stadium
They have a baseball field. I don't think they have a baseball stadium. Are you counting Cal
for
Anderson?
All that would be fun.
I mean,
They do
that
have
would
to
be good.
they do have to play kickball though, so sorry.
Look,
They have to wear jorts and they have to play kickball.
Look, those young white people are not
they
going
have
to
to
play
listen to
kickball
Alex
just
G.
anywhere.
Anyway, fifth in the Big Ten, over 500 overall. They're doing it for the rundown. Is there a measure? Is there a mark? Where do they have to get to?
I guess I did say over 500 overall, so fine. We'll put UW baseball in the rundown.
There it is.
They're headed to Evanston this weekend to take on Northwestern. We'll also play a one-off game against Illinois-Chicago, UIC, on Monday before heading home.
Ohio
And
State just has no NIL money left over. $40
yeah.
million dollar football roster, but they can't. They got nothing for baseball.
Is Emerson Hancock out now after five innings?
I mean, he got out of the innings over.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's out. They didn't, but
I'd be surprised if he went out there for another inning. He's only throwing 82 pitches, though.
Pretty solid outing, even if it is only five innings. Two runs against
no,
the Red Sox.
Oh, totally take it.
Ben Williamson made a great defensive play.
All right, let's wrap up with UW softball,
foul.
Which took two of three at Michigan State. They won the opener 3-1 with Sophia Ramuno allowing just two hits over six and a third innings and Morgan Reimer finishing out the win. Lost 6-4 on Saturday, but then won the rubber match Sunday 6-0, getting homers from Giselle Alvarez, Alexis DeBoer, and Jaden Glab. Sophia Ramuno went the distance for a one-hit shutout, strikeout eight. Huskies still stuck seventh in the Big Ten standings, back home this weekend to host third place Nebraska in their final home series with senior day on Sunday. Not a lot of seniors on the roster, all of them transfers in this year. Outfielder Alicia Flores, who's been quite effective, pitcher Stevie Hansen, and designated player Charity Sebaitasi, who could elect for 6 years, I read it. So we'll see whether she's part of senior day festivities or not.
This guy who's pitching, I assume this is Brennan Bernardino, who's pitching for the Red Sox. Do you remember him at all?
No.
He made his major league debut with the Mariners. I was listening to it on the radio when we were driving to where
Oregon?
In Oregon. Yeah.
Salem.
Salem, Oregon. You already
Just
down
outside
there,
Salem.
I think. And it was
I went with the famous cousin Katie.
So you had already left, you were ahead of us. It was that
but
day.
Came back with you. No, I went with you guys, actually. No, that's not true.
Oh, you went down with us? We were listening to it on the radio then. I swear you were in the car. This might have been a different year.
And
it was
you think I would remember a specific pitcher from the series?
No, I don't. You were not in the car with us when that happened. Maybe we came back and got you or something. Anyway, we were at the Federal Way Knights tournament and down in the Dust Bowl in Federal Way.
Oh, okay. Katie did give me a ride down to that tournament, and then you took me from there to Salem.
Brennan Bernardino made his major league debut, I think in extra innings or maybe pitched in extra innings, and Altuve got a hit on. It was like straight up your major league debut, and here's Jose Altuve in an extra inning situation. And gave up a hit to Altuve to lose the game. That's I like so distinctly remember that moment. He only pitched in two games that year and was 0-1. But I apparently still pitching, so good for him. And wow, he pitched in 55 games last year, and or 57 games. All right, well, he caught on. It's kind of cool because he was 30 when he came up with the Mariners.
All right.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is still a chance.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Oh, did you think I was going to talk about something?
Oh. Yeah, when you said that, I thought you were.
Have you ever heard of this movie, Life or Something Like It, starring Angelina Jolie?
I'm sure I've heard the name. I don't know anything about it.
Let me tell you something about it.
Okay.
From the year 2002. Why I turned on this film on Netflix, I don't know. But the Netflix homepage has the power to command masses, right?
Indeed it does.
It is literally like the Netflix front page is the most important thing in all of entertainment.
Yeah.
Which I really didn't, this is a complete aside, did not like the episode of The Studio this week.
Okay.
It was it was all about how like these doctors like really look down on entertainment. And I was like, he's the motherfucking head of a studio. I'm sorry, but the people from Cedars-Sinai would be so impressed with that. Like, there's not like a contentious relationship between medicine and film. That's bullshit. It was almost like self-serving about film because of like them treat acting like doctors would dislike them. Like somehow that was like condescending. Anyway, Life or Something Like It, starring Angelina Jolie. I turn it on Netflix knowing nothing about it. And in the first second, what do I see?
I don't know.
Establishing shot of Seattle, Washington.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
I literally had no idea that this film was set in Seattle.
Did you catch the whole Discord conversation about movies set in Seattle?
Was this on it?
No. It was
yeah,
not.
That's what I'm saying. No one has seen this movie, so no one knows that it happens.
I mean, someone may have seen it back then.
I don't think so. I'm just being honest. I looked at the Rotten Tomatoes. No reviews. Literally never seen. Angelina Jolie, they have actual rights to the Mariners, like Mariners, Angels, Blue Jays, old school, like 2002 jerseys and hats.
Okay.
The Anaheim Angels or whatever. I think they were the Anaheim Angels at the time. Immaculate. I actually think that is the best era for baseball jerseys. That's like weirdly, even though I didn't care about baseball at the time, like the time period jersey wise that I'm most nostalgic for. Those like the Troy Gloss Anaheim Angels jerseys are
sure.
Beautiful. They're worth
I mean,
art.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but they are what the Angels jerseys should always be.
And then the Toronto Blue Jays with the maple leaf and the hat. I was like, oh yeah, they were great. She's dating a Mariners player.
Actually, whatever the jerseys the Blue Jays wore last weekend should always be the Blue Jays jerseys.
Dating a Mariners player, star Mariners player, named Cal.
Wait, really?
Somebody must have like figured this out before me. I'm sure that there's been discourse about this, but I was watching it and I was like, how is this possible? And why has this not been a bigger story since then? That's what I'm telling you. No one has seen the movie.
There are no searches. There's one result for Life or Something Like It, Cal Raleigh, and it has nothing to do
I think
with
I've,
Cal
I'm
Raleigh.
The first person to figure this out.
Huh. Hold on. Maybe Life or Something Like It.
It is
Mariners.
Straight up. It is a Hallmark movie that in 2002, Hallmark movies just, the film was a commercial and financial loss. I mean, it still fucking grossed $16 million, which I'm shocked by. Because again, none of this, I had never once heard this name before.
Almost every bad team that has a movie made with them as the featured team has gone on to win a World Series eventually. So maybe we need a Mariners-based movie. And no, I will not be counting the Angelina Jolie movie Life or Something Like It.
There are a
That's
lot of
pretty
Mariners
good.
Movies. Comes on. Come on.
Well, they figure in movies. I don't think I wouldn't count them as the stars of
We all agree
Major
Little Big
League
League's
or
a
Little
Mariners
Big League. I
movie.
mean, yeah, no, it's not, though. They're the villains.
Yeah, that's why it's a Mariners movie. For once, they're the good team. Because in this movie, it's actually hilarious. They're like, at the beginning of the movie, she's like, well, Mariners fans are going to have to be resigned to another year of there's always next year. And I'm like, this was 2002.
We were not resigned to it back then.
Literally, Mariners fandom could not have been more up in this time period. They went from the first time they made the playoffs in 1995 to, at that point, basically all of the playoff appearances had happened. And then another 20 years happened, and there weren't more at that point. So now it feels apt because we're used to Mariners fandom that came after 2002. But at the time, the Mariners were like the most up you could possibly be. Guest starring in the movie. This is another crazy part if you are from Seattle. Dan Lewis, Margo Myers, Steve Poole. Apparently Theron Zahn was in there. I did not see him.
Taiji High School Zone.
However, they all have different names in the movie.
They made up names? That's great.
I'm like, why did you do that? Why couldn't you have just been Steve Poole in the movie? Because it's still Como 4. It's not a made-up network. It is Como 4, and they literally just changed their names.
That's hilarious. All right, I have two thoughts on this. Number one, we are not going to talk about it today because we don't have time, and hopefully we will talk about it in a more extended manner at a future date. But I finally got a chance to see Rainier, A Beer Odyssey at SIFF Cinema Uptown during its engagement last week. Two thumbs up. Cannot recommend any more. But one of the best parts was like the clips of TV anchors talking about Rainier and that sort of thing, and what a time capsule that was. Number two, I did not expect that we were going to talk about a Seattle-related sports movie the day before the NFL draft, and it wasn't going to be draft day,
Yeah.
which also was like a Netflix featured for a while, wasn't
Oh yeah, no, draft day still is, you pancake eating motherfucker.
it?
Anyway, it was a shocking experience watching. And again, I watched every second of this movie.
Do you recommend it?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, like, at best it's offensive. But here's what I'll say. The only part that I can recommend is early 2000 Seattle.
Oh, 10 of 10 would go back.
Yeah. The at the time Safeco Field. Like, it was actually filmed here, so there was a lot of early 2000 Seattle.
And this was the thrust of the Discord conversations, that a lot of the movies set here are not actually filmed here. I brought up that a friend told me that when they shared that the Grey's Anatomy building was actually the headquarters of, bringing it full circle, Coma 4, that it crushed two people who were big Grey's Anatomy fans, that it's not actually a hospital. And then secondly, I believe it was The Killing, where they have a totally anachronistic shot that shows the Space Needle behind the Fraser River in Vancouver.
Oh my God, that's offensive.
That is offensive. I
Life or
agree.
something like it might be offensive with the content of its movie, but they are not offensive with the shots of Seattle. Thank you. So, 0 out of 10, would not recommend.